My name is Molly Schnoke. I'm from Cleveland State University. We're here today doing interviews for the Judson Oral History Project. Can you please state your name?
Carolyn Peskin.
And today's date?
October 25th, 2016.
What is your first memory or recollection of Cleveland?
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, do you want to know about the city or what?
What do you remember first? Were you born here?
Yes, I was.
Is your first memory a childhood memory? What do you recall about growing up here in Cleveland?
Well, I was from Cleveland Heights, actually, and I was very happy with the city.
Where did you go to school?
Well, I started out at Taylor Road Elementary School, which no longer exists, and then Roosevelt Junior High, and then Heights High, Cleveland Heights High School.
What do you remember about your time in the Heights schools?
Well, they were excellent schools. I think they still are. And I played in the Heights High Orchestra. I played violin there, and we traveled around quite a bit. Gave a lot of concerts, and it was a good group. And the teachers, I was very happy with most of the teachers there. And
what was Cleveland Heights like in the 1940s?
Well, it was quite different from the way it is now. I mean, first of all, it was not racially mixed the way it is now. It was lily white. There weren't too many children on my street. It was mostly older people. That part I didn't like too well.
What were some of your favorite places to go?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, my memory isn't too good nowadays.
Okay. Is there something else you remember about that time?
I used to go with my mother downtown quite a bit. I used to like to eat lunch at Higbee's and make company. Of course, those places no longer exist. Where the beautiful Higbee's was, they have a casino now. But it used to be fun going downtown with my mother. I remember the big Christmas tree at Sterling, Linder, and Davis. It was called Sterling and Welsh in those days. Linder and Davis were separate stores. And they had a huge Christmas tree. I don't know how many stories tall it was. It seemed like about 10. And I used to love to go down there with my mother every year.
Was it full of people? What was it like when you would go down?
Nowadays when you go downtown, there's practically nobody in the stores. There's no selection of clothes. Nobody helps you. I mean, it was just the opposite then. There were a lot of people. Well, that was before the shopping malls, of course. Much different.
Yes. How did you get downtown from Cleveland Heights?
Oh, we took a streetcar. Now, I can't remember when the streetcars disappeared, in 1950s perhaps, and then we took buses.
What was it like riding the streetcar?
Well, I remember they had a conductor and a motorman. They had two separate people, and they had straw seats. That's all I remember about the streetcars. My mother never let me go anywhere by myself. I always had to go with her until I was practically in high school already. My mother was very overprotective.
What did you do after graduating from high school?
I went to college.
Where did you go?
Well, I went to Radcliffe College.
What took you to Radcliffe?
Well, I got good grades in high school. And the guidance counselor felt that I should go to Radcliffe. I was not particularly happy there, but that was her decision. So that's where I went.
Were you one of the only girls who went on to college, or did a lot of your peers also go?
Oh, a lot of my peers went. I mean, I was, well, first of all, we were Jewish, and that was like being Asian today. Everybody was expected to go to college. They used to say Jewish mother, now they say Asian mother. So, yeah, the classes, you know, they were separated by ability levels, and so just about everybody in my class, my part of that senior class, went to college.
What did you study?
I studied chemistry.
Chemistry. Was that an unusual field of study for a woman at that time?
Yes, it was. There were not too many women in chemistry. And as a matter of fact, we were separated from the Harvard men. We were segregated. We were all shepherded into a corner of the room where we really couldn't see the blackboard very well. We weren't allowed to use certain libraries because they were afraid that the men would get too much interested in the women and they couldn't be monitored. So, I mean, we were treated, you know, we were segregated. It was ridiculous, but that's what happened back in those days.
Was there any talk among your peers, your female peers, about that segregation, or did you just...
We weren't happy with it, but we weren't really activists either. We just let it be.
You just let it be. And you graduated with a degree in chemistry?
Yes.
What made you choose chemistry?
Oh, this is silly, but my mother got me the life story of Madame Curie, and I read it in English, and then I read it in French. And I was fascinated with it, so I decided I would be another Madame Curie, which of course I wasn't cut out to be. But that's how I got interested. And then I went on in graduate school. I got my master's degree in physical chemistry.
Was that even fewer women?
Yes.
What was the experience getting an advanced degree at that time in something like chemistry?
Well, the master's degree at Harvard was considered a nothing degree, which it turned out to be. I tried to get a PhD, but I had a nervous breakdown and I had to drop out after 4 years struggling.
Was it just so difficult?
It was for me. And I'd had some emotional problems before that anyhow, so.
What brought you back to Cleveland after?
Well, when I dropped out of Harvard, I came back to Cleveland and started over again and got a teaching certificate at Case Western. Well, it wasn't Case then, it was just Western Reserve. Got a teaching certificate and taught high school.
Where did you teach?
At Hathaway Brown School.
What was Hathaway Brown like during your time there?
Oh, that was quite different from the way it is now. We had a headmistress, Miss Coburn, who had been there for ages. And she was a very nice person, basically. But it turned out she had problems, too. I mean, she tried not to be prejudiced, but she was a Unitarian and all that, but she was still prejudiced. There were hardly any black students there.
By her intentionally designing it that way?
Well, she always said, they just didn't apply. We're not prejudiced. And whenever anybody says we're not prejudiced, you know, they are.
So that was something you noticed?
Oh, yeah. I noticed it right away.
Did other teachers understand that, too?
Some did and some didn't.
What was the atmosphere like then at that time? So
it was very waspish, if I can use that word. And it was all wealthy, you know, very few scholarship people. And they all looked alike. They all had blonde, long, straight hair. In the junior high level, they all wore brown and gold uniforms. I was so happy to see the HB people, and they come here. They're a variety of people, and it was so different here now.
Very different than when you were.
Oh, yeah. When I was teaching there, yeah.
How long did you teach?
Seven years.
7 years.
And I taught until my daughter was born. I got married while I was teaching there. And I left about a month before my daughter was born.
Did most women end their careers when they had children, or did a lot of women, you know, continue?
Well, some of them continued later in life, but I mean, most of them stopped when they had children, at least for a few years.
And what years was that you had your daughter?
I was there from 1960 to 67. My daughter was born in 67.
What was life like for you after you left in 67, it being a suburban mother?
Well, I got interested in my daughter's school, Lomond School. And I was very active in the PTA board there. And I tutored some of the students there, volunteer tutor. And
to continue to remain active in education, even after leaving.
I did some tutoring at the high school level, too, in chemistry and biology.
And what were sort of the things happening in, were you still in Cleveland Heights at this time?
No, I was in Cleveland Heights when I was with my parents. They later moved to Beechwood, and I didn't move with them. I mean, in my adult years, I worked for a while as a medical technician at the medical school, at the Case Western Medical School, and I lived on Cornell Road for, in fact, when I met my husband, I was given about a month to find another place to live because University Hospital was going to take over the whole street. There weren't going to be any more apartments. So when my husband proposed to me, I said yes, but I mean, that wasn't the only reason, but that ended my life on Cornell Road. And then we moved to Euclid Heights Boulevard in Cleveland Heights for a couple of years until Laura was old enough to outgrow her crib and need a separate bedroom. And then we moved to Shaker Heights.
And what was the city like then when you moved into Shaker Heights? Where did you move?
What Shaker Heights was like?
Mm-hmm.
We moved on Strathairn Road, which is one of the first integrated neighborhoods in Shaker Heights.
Did you intentionally move there because of that?
Yes, we did. We did, as a matter of fact. When I was told once it was, by somebody, a store owner, saying, you know, there are black people moving next door to you. And I said, that's exactly why we moved here. We wanted the diversity. And that put an end to that conversation.
Did you run into feelings like that a lot?
Not a lot.
Not a lot?
Just at the beginning.
How did that transition play out in the community?
It played out very well because there were other integrated. There was Ludlow and there was Lomond. Those were the main ones. And the school system was very good there.
Why do you think it went so smoothly?
Well, I think the Lomond Association and probably Ludlow Association, too, were very efficient. They knew what they were doing. I mean, there was a housing office. They showed mostly white people to black neighborhoods and black people to white neighborhoods. I don't know if that would be legal anymore, but they did that, and it worked. There was somebody I named Lucille Anderson who was in charge of that. She's no longer living, but she was helpful.
Did you stay in that neighborhood?
Yeah, we stayed there on Strathairn Road for 46 years until we moved into Judson, and now our daughter is living in our old house.
How does she like the neighborhood?
She likes it.
She likes it?
Yeah, she was living in Willoughby for a long time with her gentleman friend, and then they moved to Strathairn recently, very recently, just a few months ago.
What other recollections do you have about that time period in Shaker Heights?
It was in the 1960s. Yeah, it was quite different from the way it had been originally. I mean, originally it was only wealthy people, wealthy white people, and so on and so forth, but it changed greatly after that.
Do you think changed for the better after that?
I think so. I mean, there was some trouble with foreclosures, you know, the people unable to pay their rent. There was that problem later on. But the people there were very friendly. I mean, we had wonderful neighbors.
Do you recall the time period around the controversy around Shaker Lakes?
Oh, yeah. Gee, you should be contacting my daughter about that one. She's written a book about the Nature Center. My husband, Perry, was active in, the Clark Freeway was, he was very much opposed to that. And he and some of the neighbors wrote letters and so on and so forth to this city. And, of course, the Clark Freeway never went through.
How did you and your neighbors feel about the Clark Freeway and everything that was happening around that?
Most of my close neighbors didn't have that much interest, but people that lived closer to the area did. I'm trying to think of the names of some of those people, and I can't remember them.
What, if you didn't live as close, what prompted you and your husband to get involved?
Well, my husband is a strong environmentalist. In fact, he's written a book on plant conservation. It's called The Search for Lost Habitats. And so we've always been environmentalists. I wasn't as active as he was, but it was important to me.
Were there any other environmental issues that you and your husband got involved in?
Well, his book was mainly about the Great Lakes area, about plant conservation in the Great Lakes area. And then he was going to write a second volume. He wrote mainly about the Great Lakes states and parts of Canada, parts of Ontario, and he was going to spread out into other areas. He had first written magazine articles, some for the Explorer here from the Natural History Museum, and some from a Canadian wildflower magazine, and some others. In fact, he was inducted into the Heights High Hall of Fame on the basis of some of his conservation work. And he was going to write a second volume, but he has Alzheimer's now. So he was never able to complete that. He never really got started on it.
What was the environmental conservation movement like early on? Was that a difficult area to be involved in?
No, because when he went on his trips mainly, gathering specimens of rare plants and studying them, and I went with him on most of those trips and held the plants when he was photographing them, things of that sort. So he wasn't just interested in the Cleveland area, actually. I mean, he was interested in the whole country, because under President Nixon, the Endangered Species Act was passed, and his book mentions that and what things that have been done since then to conserve natural habitats.
What are some of the places you traveled to?
Oh dear, we went all over the country, actually. And we also went to parts of Central and South America. He wasn't planning to write about those, but we did a lot of our travels there, especially after he retired from teaching. He took early retirement so that he could spend more time writing his book and his magazine articles.
Did you travel to some of the national parks to
yes,
do
we,
your work, or was it other locations that weren't protected yet?
Yeah, we went to some of the national parks, but he was mainly interested in other places.
Such as?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the names of all of them. If I had the book in front of me, I could tell you, because each chapter is out of a different place. I just can't remember all the names.
What were some of the more interesting places you remember visiting?
Oh, gosh, my memory just isn't good anymore. I'm 85 years old. And he has no memory whatsoever now. So.
What kept you in the Cleveland area then? If you had traveled all over the place and saw these other places, what was the draw of Cleveland?
Well, my daughter was in the Shaker schools, and I liked those. Perry's brother, Alan, he was a CSU professor. He lived close by. And we had some other friends from, you know, certain organizations that we belonged to. So, and we didn't know many people elsewhere. I mean, our family was very small. So we just stayed in Cleveland.
What were some of the places you and your husband liked to go after he retired?
Well, some of the places that we liked in Central America, there was Costa Rica, Panama, Belize, the Galapagos.
You went to the Galapagos?
Yeah, see, we took mostly eco tours.
Oh.
We also went to Hawaii, Alaska. We did go to England and Scotland, and he went some other places that I didn't go with him, like Australia and Israel, parts of Africa, Kenya. I was never much of a homebody. I mean, I told you I had mental emotional problems, so I don't know if we want to continue this conversation, but I didn't travel much. I was a homebody.
You liked being at home while he would travel?
Yeah. Well, I liked traveling with him. But otherwise, I mean, I didn't have much of a social life.
What were some of the things you liked to do?
Well, I got interested in music, and I played the recorder, which when I heard my daughter play in the third grade, it didn't sound like much of an instrument, little shrill soprano recorder. But then I heard some of the older kids, the sixth graders, play, and I fell in love with the instrument. And I went to CSU, got a second master's degree in music theory and music history. And one of my professors was Dr. Martin, who lived here. He spent his last years here in Judson. And then I used my degree to arrange some music for my recorder ensembles and also for some choirs that I sang in. And well, to make a long story short, I ended up being the vice president of the American Recorder Society, the national vice president. So some of my music and articles were published in their magazine.
Where are some of the places you played?
Where? Well, in different, I mean, mostly in places like schools and churches and here in the Cleveland area.
Do you still play the recorder?
I still play. I still pay my dues to the chapter, but I'm not active locally or nationally anymore. But I play here because we have a music therapist here, Mary Lou Barrett, and we go to various parts of Judson, mainly to the assisted living sections, and we initiate sing-alongs. She plays the piano and I play the recorder, and we do mostly popular songs and patriotic songs, holiday music, and now they have formed a choir with some of the assisted living people, so I'm helping her. She directs that choir. I'm helping her with that too. So my volunteer work here involves mainly working with her.
Is there a large membership in the Recorder Society?
No. Even on a national level, they've lost a lot of members. I mean, when they used to have women who were not working moms used to join, but most women are now working moms, and they don't have time. I think it's true of a lot of musical organizations. So, no, they don't have a large membership.
Is there anything else you want to share about your story here in Cleveland?
I know I didn't tell you very much, but
any big events you remember? Any special occasions?
Oh, there were events, but I was kind of young. There was the Great Lakes Exposition, but what year was that, 1930-something? So I think I was not even in elementary school when that happened, so I don't remember too much about it.
Did your parents say anything about it to you being here? Do you remember anything like that?
They probably did, but I don't remember.
Do you remember any big sporting events throughout the years?
Oh, yeah. Cleveland Indians won the World Series in 1948.
How old were you then?
Well, let's see, I was born in the 31, so I guess I was 17.
Was that exciting?
It was. Oh, I was never a big sports fan, but it was exciting.
Did they have a parade? Did anything? Do you recall?
I can't remember.
You didn't go?
I didn't go, I know that. I wasn't that much of a sports fan.
Was it on radio or TV at the time? Do you recall?
We didn't have TV until my parents wanted me to study, so we didn't have much TV. I graduated from high school in 49, so I mean, it was on radio, of course.
What brought you here to Judson?
Okay. I began to realize that my husband was having real problems, and I had problems too. I mean, I had lymphoma, and I had other health problems. So I was getting tired of cooking and laundry and housekeeping. I mean, it became very difficult for me. And we looked at different places. We looked at some of the Jewish places, and we decided we wanted more diversity than that. And then when Alan, my brother, decided he wanted to move here, and he had been here, he had some lung problems because he was a heavy smoker. So he was here in rehab for a while. First he was in Menorah Park, and then he was here, and he said the food was so much better here. So everything he said about Judson was glowing. So they moved in 2014, and in August, I think it was, and we moved in October. They convinced us that that was the place we should be, and we're happy here.
You've mentioned throughout the interview a lot of aspects around diversity.
Yeah.
That seem important to you.
They did, yes.
Where did that come from?
That's a good question. I think I could trace it way back to my early childhood. We had a black maid, and I noticed that her skin color was different from ours. And I asked her, how come you're brown and the rest of us are white? And my mother grabbed me and she spanked me and she said, you never asked that question. That's a terrible question. I wondered, why is that a terrible question? And I think the maid was upset too. Well, why was it? I kept thinking about that throughout the years. Why was that a terrible question? And then I decided it was a terrible question because people were prejudiced. It wasn't a terrible question. It was just that people weren't used to it. So that's how I got interested in diversity, I think. And then at Radcliffe, I mean, people were treated as equals, even though there weren't that many black people around. They were treated as equals, and I noticed that. So I think that's where it all came from, various things put together.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Well, I just want to say that I think Judson is a wonderful place. We even have, she's like a rabbi here. She's not ordained, but she, Eileen Collins. I mean, five of us became B'nai Mitzvah. You know what that is, like a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah? Well, we had four bat mitzvahs, and Alan was the sole male bar mitzvah, but that was like in June. And I mean, I never expected to ever do that until we met Eileen Collins, and she got us interested.
Did you not celebrate that in your childhood?
We went to a Reformed Jewish temple, and Rabbi Abbot Hillel Silver who was a great name in history. I mean, he was very instrumental in getting the State of Israel started, but he wasn't interested in the traditions that much. He was more interested in being assimilated. I mean, my grandparents were born in Russia and Poland. My parents were born in this country, and they were much interested in assimilation, and so was the rabbi. Things are different there now also. But let's see, why am I bringing that up?
Whether or not you had your bat mitzvah when you were young.
Yeah, so some people did, but we were confirmed, and he believed that confirmation was all that was needed. So very few people became, no, they didn't have bat mitzvahs in those days. Women were not allowed to participate, I don't believe. If they did, it was very, very few. But not very many became bar mitzvahs at that time either. Now they do, but not in those days.
Many communities at that time had restrictive covenants in
house. Oh, Shaker Heights did for a long time. Well, you should talk to my daughter. She's written She wrote two volumes called Deep Cover Cleveland, 99 Things You Never Knew About the Cleveland Area. And she's a person full of facts. She's given talks here in the auditorium. She gives slideshows. She sells her books. And now she has this one about the Shaker Heights Nature Center. But yes, there were restricted covenants in Cleveland Heights, too. But longer in Shaker Heights, I believe.
But you and your family didn't...
We were beyond that. I mean, they no longer had those when we lived in Shaker Heights. I mean, they were Jews were not allowed to live in many areas at one time, but we didn't come across anything like that.
No. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to share your story with us today.
Okay, if I can think of anything else later on, I'll let you know.
Please do.